Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And a great good morning, good day to you. We are KPUA Hilo, K-O-R-L, Waianae, Honolulu, K-O-N-I, Lanai City, K-T-O-H, Kalaheo. And we've got tea times for you because it's going to be a gorgeous day today. Sunny on the leeward side, certainly a little cloudiness over the Ko'olau Range. Maybe a light shower at times in the morning. High up to 88 degrees. Of course, if you're in the sun, it's probably not going to feel that way. Easterly winds to start with coming then out of the northeast later on. So breezy expected to develop, but pretty cool. And right now it's a great time to get out and play and see if I've got anything early for you. There's an 848 on the volcano course, and it was 59 degrees just 30 minutes ago. That's nice and cool. Makalei has an 852. That's up country, a 926 as well. Southside Men's Club, may you all hit the sweet spot every time. They've got tee times, though, at Poipu Bay Golf Course, if you'd like to play, an 830 and 1130. Royal Hawaiian Country Club, there's an 838, a 912. Makaha East, a 930 and an 830. Kahili Course, that's the home of the Maui School of Golf, and owner Claude Brousseau is going to be on the show in just a couple of minutes with a announcement that he's got for us. Wailea, it's a busy day at Wailea, but you know, on the blue course, and Brenda Rego is there. She is a Hawaii State Hall of Famer, a Hawaii Golf Hall of Famer. We've got a 9:16, a 10:12, and an 11 o'clock if you would like to go out and play a round of golf. If you need something done for your clubs, like get them re-gripped, they're slipping a little bit, you don't have the same grip on them, okay. Aloha Golf Center on Kalani Street, City Square Shopping Center. That's where you can get everything taken care of. You can get new clubs, you can get fitted, you can get your everything. Just go there and they'll take care of you. We're going to talk with Shane Bacon, golf broadcast announcer, analyst, Fox Sports, PGA Tour, after we thank the people who make this show possible. Okay, we're going to go straight into Shane Bacon. Welcome into the clubhouse, our golf broadcast announcer and analyst. If you were watching the U.S. Open, and I know I was watching the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, Fox Sports broadcasts all USGA events and did a fabulous job doing it. Welcome into the clubhouse, Shane. Welcome. Okay, we're going to try to bring Shane on into the clubhouse. We're not able to. Can you hear me?
I've got you. How are you?
Excellent, sir. Excellent. And I enjoyed the broadcast very much. You did a great job. Really wonderful time watching golf that depressed me. Because if I go out and play golf and I'm running after my ball, you know, and I might go, for the pace of play, I'm just going to stop that ball and I'll pick it up because, you know, I'm not really playing for score when I'm out playing with friends, and why would I want them to watch me suffer? Everybody has days like that, right? So that we have the Fillmore situation over there. We've got the setup of a Shinnecock. We've got the whole locations at Shinnecock. But really, the story needs to be about the man who, since the 80s, after Curtis Strange, is the first guy to defend a U.S. Open title. And that's Brooks Koepka after Aaron Hills, and now he goes to the U.S. Open, and he shows us that, hey, you know, I really am U.S. Open material. Aaron Hills wasn't, a one-off because it had those wide fairways and whatever. I played the toughest course in the United States, and I won, and my score was one over. Shane, what's your takeaway when you think about everything you saw at Shinnecock?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of what you said is, I think, kind of what I was echoing, the last couple of days. I did a clubhouse podcast with Curtis Strange, kind of wrapping up what went down. And, you know, that was kind of one of the first things I brought up, was the idea that, you know, there's so much noise outside of winning. And the focus should be on Koepka pulling off one of the rarest of rare accomplishments. You know, we never see this. I mean, this, you just mentioned it. And it was so funny. I was having dinner with Curtis Strange the Sunday night before the U.S. Open. We, about five of us, went to dinner. And Curtis isn't a guy that likes to talk about his own accomplishments. And I said, you know, we had having some wine. And I said, Curtis, you know, you pulled off something that might be the rarest feat in golf. And of course, he kind of poo-pooed what I was talking about. But it was an interesting foreshadow headed into the week because, you know, you look at Tiger and Jack and Arnie and the names go on and on and on, people that weren't able to win back-to-back U.S. Opens. Curtis being on that list and now kept joining it. I mean, it is a crazy accomplishment to not just win one, but to win two and win them in two different years because Arid Hills was a golf course that was completely different than Shinnecock, and yet he was able to win in completely different fashion.
It was spectacular, and he was so calm, cool, collected. He didn't show any of the emotion that many of the players were not only showing on the telecast, you know, things that we didn't see, but on Twitter, on all the social media platforms, talking about how this is such a mess. What have they done? And why did they have to make Shinnecock, which is already a tough course, just about unplayable? And then, as one person said, absolutely, they lost the course on Saturday. I was able to watch some of the Saturday play before the show started and then after the show, and it just got progressively worse. So, you know, we talk about everybody's playing the same course. So what's the big deal? But Saturday was a tale truly of two courses. Morning and afternoon were two different play. It wasn't really a level playing field. At least that was my impression. What was yours?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone back on it a little bit because, you know, when you think about, quote unquote, the draw, if you think about an Open Championship and you think about the draw, and one of the big things you've got to get early in the week is get on the good side of the draw. So you've got to be the person that goes out there in the morning when it's not windy or in the afternoon when the wind lays down. So, you know, while maybe this is more of a rare thing at a U.S. Open, it's definitely part of it as well. I mean, if you're, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 shots back and you go out there and put together a good score and then the wind starts blowing, well, then you just took advantage of it. And that's what I thought Daniel Berger and Tony Finau did. And, USGA said it, a couple of the hole locations they wish they wouldn't have put where they put them because they didn't realize the winds were going to be up that much.
True.
I give them credit on what they did on Sunday. I mean, they presented a golf course that if you put it in the right spot, it was very playable. And if you didn't, it wasn't. And I mean, we saw Tommy Fleetwood shoot 63, but we saw guys like Finau and Daniel Berger and, others, the big name players that went out there and didn't put together great scores. So, I mean, look at Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson. I mean, that was the pairing that you thought was probably going to produce a U.S. Open champion, maybe outside of Dustin and Koepka.
Yeah.
And they both played awful on Sunday. So, I mean, it wasn't like everybody was out there firing 65.
No.
It was just a golf course that you could put together a round if possible. So I think if you're going to look at what happened on Saturday, in the sense of not totally being prepared for what the golf course might be, I thought they did a great job on Sunday not being scared to present a playable golf course, even if that yielded around a 60.
And you're absolutely right. They came back to normal on Sunday after tricking it out. You know, they tricked out Shinnecock so much. Like, we're protecting par at all costs, and we don't care what we're doing. Now, Mike Davis has always been the course setup guy, and then he became the executive director of the USGA in charge. But he also kept that role still because everybody loved the way he set up golf courses. And there's a part of me that wonders if Mike Davis has come to the point where he just needs to prove to everybody that he's still the best. Finding places where he can do this and that to make it just a little bit harder to show that what a great, you know, mind he has. And I was reading someone said that, you know, Mike Davis, who's got a four, something like that. He's got a great handicap. He's a great player. They said that he wouldn't have been able to shoot 100 the way that he set it up.
I don't think I would have either. I played, you know, we get a chance to go out there and play the golf course, you know, four weeks or so before. And, it is anything out of position and you're scrambled to make bogey. I mean, it was a really, really tough test. And I think on Saturday you saw it, show its teeth. But like I said, I was really pumped that they came out on Sunday and did it a little bit different because, you know, we had such a cool experience with that leaderboard. So many guys with a chance to win. And to get Fleetwood doing what he did there.
Oh, it was amazing. Yes.
It was so much fun to watch it. You're literally on the edge of your seat rooting on every shot he hits. He made that putt on 15. That was one of Brad Faxon and I's holes. And, you know, we got to kind of call the birdie putt because that was when it really started to feel like something crazy was about to happen. And then he stuffed it on 18 and sadly he just kind of underread that putt. But, you know, it's crazy to think that in two consecutive days you got one of the toughest golf courses that you'll ever see. And then the next day, we almost saw the first 62 at a U.S. Open. I mean, it really does show what setting the golf course up can do.
Exactly. We're talking with Shane Bacon, Fox Sports, official network of the USGA events, including the U.S. Open, of course, at Shinnecock last weekend. Golf writer, commentator, PGA Tour Live, top golf host. The clubhouse with Shane Bacon, where can we find that?
You know, just anywhere where you find, you know, podcasts. I mean, iTunes, Apple Music. I mean, it's on SoundCloud and Spotify and all those kind of places. So, we try to roll one out once a week with some interesting people. And like I said, just had Curtis Strange on to kind of give his thoughts on, you know, to get him to walk with Brooks Koepka's group on Sunday and to be the voice, the first guy to congratulate him walking off the golf course. And those guys are kind of in a very, very, very small fraternity. You know, that is a pretty special moment for us at Fox to be able to see that kind of happen in front of our eyes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what did he tell you how he felt? I mean, was he with Koepka during the entire final nine holes going to the finish?
The last round he walked with him the entire round. So, you know, he was out there shot for shot and watching what was going down. And, you know, it was a great move. Our producer, Mark Loomis, actually. Curtis is normally the guy in the final group. I mean, he normally follows the last two guys with the best chance of winning. And Loomis made a call and said, you know, I know we've got, you know, Tony Finau and Berger out there, but, you know, let's put you with this just in case. And it ended up working out perfectly because, like I said, he got a chance to kind of see something that he did 30 years ago, you know, transpire before his eyes.
Exactly. And what are his thoughts on when he was talking, when he was interviewing him? That must have been... You know, here I am talking to the person who just took my record away from me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. He doesn't, you know, Curtis is a very kind of humble guy about his career. I mean, he doesn't love speaking about himself. And it's a testament to how good of a guy he is. And I think he's almost in a way a little bit relieved. He doesn't have to always be the guy. You know, he's like now got somebody to join the group, and now Koepka did it. Because he goes, I knew it would inevitably happen. You know, I'm sure he thought Tiger would probably do it, and then maybe after Tiger, we might see a Spieth do it or somebody like that. Of course, we saw Dustin Johnson come close, you know, to winning three in a row, really. But he finally gets this guy to do it. And it's so interesting. The Koepka thing is so weird that, you know, it's a guy that has all the talent in the world, but he only has one PGA Tour win outside of these two U.S. Opens. You know, yes. And that was a red-hot weekend in Phoenix. I mean, outside of that, he contends a lot, but he doesn't win. But for some reason, you know, this championship brings the best out of him. And, you know, he leaned on the short game on Sunday, and it was a heck of an effort.
Let me ask you, we're watching Dustin Johnson, and we're all like, round one he's leading, round two he's got to run away with this U.S. Open. What is it, you know, in the locker room, so to speak? What's the word on what happened with Dustin's game?
I don't look too much into his weekend simply because it wasn't like he was hitting a whole bunch of squirrely golf shots. It wasn't like he was melting down on the golf course. He just wasn't making anything. And he didn't hit the ball great early in the week, to be fair, considering what he just come off of in Memphis with that big win. You know, he wasn't hitting the ball exactly where he probably wanted to, and he was making a lot of putts, and he just stopped making putts. So, you know, I mean, he's just one of those guys, like, if he wins or loses, it doesn't matter really the fashion. I don't really think it gets to him. I'm sure he looked at this as a really good chance to add a second U.S. Open and to really cement himself as the best player in the world, but I don't think he's probably going to take too much from it. You know, if you're hitting good putts from 8 feet and they're rolling over the left lip and the right lip and not going in, you know, that's just not your week to win. So, I think if it was a different way of losing, you know, a major meltdown, you know, it lasts nine holes and he shoots 38.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that might be something more to look at. But I just feel like he kind of had his B game, C-plus game throughout most of the week and was able to nearly win with that, which is almost a testament to just how dang good he is.
It was really cute watching Brooks Koepka, the U.S. Open champion two times in a row, have an interview saying that I am so tired. All I want to do is go take a nap. And I don't know where the trophy is. No, I have one at home, and I didn't really want to take this one with me. And by the way, Dustin, DJ, showed up at my door at 8 o'clock in the morning. I had gone to bed by 4:30. He said he got home at 4:15, fell asleep at 4:30. And here's Dustin Johnson going, hey, I want to come in. I guess everybody just wants to be, of course, they're good friends. And that in and of itself is wonderful. They're so alike in so many ways, and their stature. They've got the same coach, Claude Harmon. Let me ask you one thing that a lot of people have been talking about, kind of behind the scenes, some of the older guys. They say that today's golfers aren't as interesting as the golfers of yesteryear, when everybody had an individual swing. And today, everybody's kind of got the same swing thing going on. They've got the same sort of body, the same sort of type. What do you think about when people look at it that way?
Yeah, it's not. I don't think so. I mean, I find these guys. I think it's just gotten more global, more interesting. You've got different faces, different races, all sorts of different things, and they're playing and competing, having a chance to win. I mean, I think it's as exciting as it's ever going to be. I think that the fact that you go to a U.S. Open, I mean, you talk to these guys like a Curtis Strange or a Paul Azinger about when they played in U.S. Opens, and, you know, they'd say there's 20 guys that they thought could legitimately win. Now, those 20 names might switch depending on who's playing well that year or whatever. But, you know, I mean, you look at a U.S. Open like this, there might be 70 or 80 guys that could win any event, any week, any major, and they believe they should. And it's just getting younger. These kids come out of college and think they should be world beaters right away. I just find golf very, very intriguing right now because, you know, you see guys battling. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood and Dustin Johnson probably wouldn't be battling in many sports next, you know, side by neck.
Yeah.
But Tommy Fleetwood is out there, you know, firing a career round, and he's continuing to impress, and he's going to win a major championship soon. And I mean, you see Dustin out there, you know, everything you'd ever want in a golfer on the planet if you were going to mold a golfer who, you know, is still having to make 8-footers, and he wasn't able to do it. He didn't win. So, I don't know. I find the variety very refreshing. And maybe some of these guys have swings that look very similar, and maybe they all go to use TrackMan and they're beating out the best numbers possible. But yeah. I mean, that just to me makes golf better and deeper. And I just think you look at the talk and the buzz around this U.S. Open, and as we head to Carnoustie, it's just. You know, people are fired up to see what's going to happen next.
Okay, I'm fired up for Ryder Cup. So when I'm watching these guys, I'm watching Tommy Fleetwood, and I'm going, I don't want it to be a blowout. I want it to be contended. And I want these guys to go head-to-head. It's going to be in France, gives them a little bit of a home court, so to speak, advantage. It's just going to be very interesting because we've got some very strong players. And if they can coalesce, like the U.S. team did the last Ryder Cup, we're going to have something really exciting going on in France for Ryder Cup. You are off. You've got a week. I guess you had a week off, and now you're going over to the U.S. Senior Open. You'll be covering the U.S. Senior Open?
Yeah, I was late in a prone position for about 4 days and didn't move off my couch. But now I've dragged myself off and I've started to kind of dive a little into the Broadmoor. But yeah, we do Colorado Springs next week. One of the most excited events for me. I love doing the senior, and also love when you get to go to a place like that because it was 113 yesterday in Phoenix. So I'm pretty excited about going to Colorado Springs. It's not going to be this right now.
Well, Shane Bacon, Fox Sports, official network of all USGA events. I'm going to be talking right after you with Ryan Toole, Director of Tournament Operations, Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. We have qualifiers for the U.S. Junior M and the Girls Junior M, and we're really excited because watching some of our kids get to go onto the big stage is really awesome. Thank you for being on the show this morning. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Anytime. Always a pleasure on my end.
Aloha. That's Shane Bacon, Fox Sports golf writer, commentator, and of course, he's host of The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. We'll be back right after this with Ryan Toole. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens. Your plumbing can't wait.
Okay, we're having just a little bit of difficulty with some of our...
Or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home.
It's only
in my
headset.
Get your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's creative! Plumbing! 841-2837. Your experts on call.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint, it's polished concrete as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurestone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf is easier with coaching from PGA Master Teaching Professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game. Scratch golfer or just beginner, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Claude is at Maui School of Golf at the Kahili Course on Maui. You'll get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com. That's Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
Oh, yes, we're having an awesome day today in the clubhouse. It's a wonderful feeling to look outside and see how beautiful the sky is. It's clear. We've got the breezes keeping the sky blue. You should really come over to Hawaii. I know you all want to. And if you haven't traveled Neighbor Island, it's a great time. Go to Poipu Bay. Let's go to Poipu Bay. We should also just go to Kauai now because Ryan Toole, Director of Tournament Operations, the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. If I'm not mistaken, that's where you are right now. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Danielle. How are you?
Excellent. Are you on Kauai?
I sure am. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning over here. Nice and quiet and breezy.
You know, and you got to spend some time at one of the favorite golf courses in Hawaii at Wailua, where the U.S. Junior Am and the U.S. Girls Am was contested?
Yeah, sure did. So on Wednesday, we had our 2018 U.S. Boys and Girls Junior Amateur Qualifiers. We like to hold them together just because it's an easier event and fun day for us at Wailua, which is an amazing golf course, one of our favorites over here on Kauai.
It is beautiful. It's a gorgeous golf course, and everybody says if you're on Kauai, you have to play there. And, of course, the locals probably would prefer it if not too many people would show up and take me up on that. So the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association hosted the 2018 qualifiers. And let's just announce who is going. And this is one of the young ladies that we've been following for years now, Malia Nam, medalist. Kailua is where she's from. She earned medalist honors, finishing at 1-under 71, followed by Lacey Uchida of Hilo. Congratulations, even par 72. And Stephanie Kirakau of Sydney. I hope I didn't hurt her name too much. Sydney, Australia. She got the final qualifying spot by winning a 2-hole sudden death playoff. How did that sudden death go?
Yeah, it was pretty good. The girls both tied on the first hole over there at Wailua, and then Stephanie made a 4 on the second hole to beat one of our juniors, Maya McDonald, who is a Hawaii girl. And we actually sent Stephanie last year as well, so she's qualified twice through our Hawaii qualifier. And it's nice to see her go because she's a great player.
Yeah, and does she come up from Australia every year? That's quite the expense.
Yeah, she does. So they don't. The USGA doesn't run any international qualifiers for the junior events. So folks like her who are out of the country need to come to the mainland. Most of them, she said, most of her friends go to California, but she likes to come to Hawaii with her family to vacation and then try to qualify as well.
I like it. Does she go back to Australia before she goes back to the States for?
Yeah, she said she was going to do a little back and forth, which can get a little hectic with her golf game. But she performed pretty well last year, so we're still rooting for her pretty hard this year.
That's
as well,
great.
You know, our two stars. Malia is one of our top stars. This is her fourth year going to the girls' junior event. So we're really looking for her to do really well this year.
Yeah, I'm really rooting for her and, of course, for Lacey Uchida of Hilo. For all of you who work so hard on your game, you junior golfers, you're awesome. You know, there was a big drive to get membership for the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association when we had the Junior Golf Day. Are people able to still call in, you know, to the U.S., the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association and say, hey, I'd like to be a member? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is our 20th year as an organization. So we have a $20 membership fee this year, celebrating our 20th anniversary. And we're open to ages 7 to 18. So any kids that don't reach their 19th birthday this year can either go through our website, hsjga.org, or they can call our office and we can get you help signed up. And that allows you to play in our events. We give you a handicap index. So it's a good opportunity for kids that are kind of already into the game versus kind of just starting out.
Okay. So that's what my next question was. You know, at what level do you think that a child should be before they join Hawaii State Junior Golf Association?
So in terms of what we are looking for is we want kids that have general knowledge of the game of golf, can keep up pace and play-wise, and kind of know the rules a little bit, just so... because we leave it to the specific island associations, so Maui Junior Golf, Oahu Junior Golf Association, and Big Eye Junior Golf and Kauai Junior Golf, kind of to teach the kids the ropes, and then once they kind of get into the competitive nature of things, they can then move up hopefully one day to Hawaii State Junior Golf as well.
Awesome. All right. Now we just talked about the girls, okay, at Wailua, qualifying for the U.S. Junior M. Now let's go for the boy. The boy, there were three spots for girls, only one spot for boys. And Jacob Torres of IAEA, congratulations, medalist, the one qualifying spot, scoring 3 under 69. Way to go. Jacob, how come three for girls, one for boys?
Yeah, so it's all based on the number of the entrants into the qualifier itself. So just like all other USGA qualifiers, US Open, US Women's Open, and US Amateur qualifiers, the amount of spots that the site gets is all dependent on how many people sign up to play in that specific qualifier. So unfortunately, you know, we had less boys than girls. And there are more boys across the country that are trying to qualify as well. So that's another reason why we get less spots. But luckily, actually next year, they're moving from... The field and the championship proper from 150 to 300 players. So they're doubling the field essentially. So hopefully we'll be able to boost our entries and also get more qualifiers out here.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about Wailua and what makes it special.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you know, but in 1975 they did hold USGA Amateur Pub Links Championship, which is probably one of their best events in terms of things that they've held over the years. And they also hold a college event each year, but not only is it a great golf course on the east shore of Kauai, but it's only $1 for junior golfers, which is great. And really, I think the best thing is it's a simple layout, but it's a tough test in that, you know, the greens are really what gets you there. They're pretty tough to access by, you know, fairway and tee box. And really, it's just the wind can shift around there, too. And I think that's what got the golfers the other day is they practiced one day and the wind was, you know, blowing one way. And then the next day we had some Kona winds and they had some issues kind of reading their shot.
Yeah, we've had them shifting considerably lately, out of the south and then boom, out of the north. I didn't expect it to be out of the northeast coming up. So it is a challenge when you're going into a championship situation, how to adjust your game for the windy conditions and what's going to happen and how the ball's going to react. Now, is it true that there are no bunkers at Wailua?
Oh, no, there are. That might be Hilo golf course that they're talking about. Over on the Big Island.
Yes.
That's the one that has no bunkers over there.
Yes.
We do have bunkers. Luckily, we do have bunkers that at Wailua. They might not be in the best shape, but we do have quite a few over here.
Do you have a lot of rain at Wailua? I know the reason they don't have them at Hilo is because of the rainy conditions. I mean, they'd get washed out all the time. How about at Wailua? What's the weather like?
Yeah, there was definitely, you know, back in April when we had some flooding, there was definitely some issues on the golf course. But the ground, that's the one thing we love about Wailua too, is the ground staff there does a great job. And they really take pride in not only everyday setup, but when they have events like, you know, USGA Junior AM qualifier, they really take pride in making the golf course look great and play even better. So that's one thing we really appreciate about having events there is that the ground staff of the County of Kauai have really put their hard work and time and effort into it.
Okay. Can we take a really quick break? We need to make an adjustment. Claude has to call back so Mark can call in. Right now, all the lines are tied up. And Mark, We're going to get that. I have to let him know that we're going to get that straightened out. We have Mark Rolfing calling in, and we're having a problem because he can't get through. We're getting someone getting it done, Mark. Stand by, please. Okay. Sorry for that, but Mark Rolfing is on the board of the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association, so I'm sure he'll understand and appreciate that we're having this chat with you. So Mark is not hold right now. That's awesome. Thank you very, very much. And Ryan, thank you for being on the show. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Danielle. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. And have a great time. The Hawaii State Junior Golf Association is hosting the 2018 King Auto Group 13-18 State Championship and Trusted Choice Big Eye Qualifier at Club at Hokulea. So you get to be there too, don't you? Do you ever get to play a round of golf?
I wish I could play there. I do get to go to that course. It's one of my favorite courses over on the Big Island. So I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Have a great time.
Thanks, Danielle.
Aloha. We're going to come back with Mark Rolfing right after this.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
As we jet from place to place, we buckle in knowing they maintain their planes daily. They don't put off repairs till the next month. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your water line, sewer line, or fire line broke at the worst possible moment. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or commercial center, high-rise, townhouse, or hen house. You need your job done now. Done right. That's Creative Plumbing. Your experts on call.
We know you aren't looking for a new garage door right now. Even though you haven't changed it in many years, even though the new styles you've seen look clean and strong, even though your current garage door is creaking and groaning, even though your garage door is the first impression that visitors have of your home, you just aren't ready. Or are you? Rainer Hawaii will make it simple to beautify your home. Call Rainer now at 676-3667. That's Rainer at 676-3667.
Have you ever seen a building or a magazine photo or traveled to a place that captured your imagination? Futuristone's Master Craftsman can transform your vision into a reality. Does your project call out for a permeable pavement, parking area, pool deck, plaza, or grand entry? Bring us your plans. Futuristone's unique outdoor products and services can turn your resort, building, or home's exterior into an oasis that will last a lifetime. Call Futuristone, 841-7440 across Hawaii. Futuristone, only the best.
Ah, here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
And we're so happy to have Mark Rolfing, of course, golf analyst and golf commentator and Golf Channel and NBC Sports. And he's the president and founder of the Chicago Parks Golf Alliance. He does so much to just make Hawaii golf what it is today. And Top Golf coming to Hawaii, we're looking forward to the gatherings they're going to have for folks who would like to comment. We're going to talk about the Travelers, and we're going to talk about the U.S. Open, and we're going to talk about Phil Mickelson. But let's start off. There were a couple of interesting things. Welcome into the clubhouse, Mark.
Well, thank you, Danielle. Good morning, everybody on the island.
It's great to have you. I've been watching you on Golf Central, on Golf Channel, and watching the Travelers. What's up with rules lately? It's... this is getting funny. I mean, Zach Johnson in the water, I thought that was brilliant, the way he used the lateral. Yes?
Yeah, that was a good use of the rules, and it was certainly within the rules. That was sort of the anti what Phil Mickelson did at the U.S. Open last week. But, you know, it just shows me more and more, though. I have this feeling, Danielle, that the rest of the world is kind of looking at golf and saying, your rules are archaic. They're just too complicated. You need to simplify things. And the USGA is in the process of simplifying the rules, and the rules just shouldn't be as big a part of the game as they are right now.
As they are, because they become the focal point. And how can they not become the focal point? Let's talk a little bit. One more, before we get to Phil Gates or Phil Moore or whatever we want to call it, on the third hole, it was a par four. Zach Johnson's 12th hole just happens to we're focusing on Zach. His putt stops on the lip of the hole. He waits, but then he approaches the ball. And that's, is that when that 10-second rule starts, when you approach the ball?
Yeah, that's when the 10 seconds begin. And, you know, we had a clock on it, and we were watching it while it was occurring. And it was pretty clear that the 10 seconds had gone by. And even if the ball falls in the hole, it doesn't matter if you've gone past that 10 seconds. He didn't know it at the time. He ended up playing two balls, which is smart. I don't like doing that generally for the average player, because I think that slows down play. You know, clearly he made a par on the hole, and the stroke didn't count that fell in the hole. You know, again, it's just another example, though, of the rules taking too much of the limelight. I think that's the only highlight they're showing of Zach Johnson.
Yeah, you're right. It is. I keep seeing it, and that's what we've been, you know, on Golf Central, of course, because it's, for us who are in the game, it's confusing even. I mean, I'm looking at there. Wait a second. Now, the putt dropped, but it was after the 10 seconds. So if he waited further away before approaching the ball, it would have counted as a birdie because it went in before he approached and the 10-second clock started. But if he waited, then pace of play is messed up. And, you know, the whole thing goes on and on and on. But after all of that, what we're really waiting for, the elephant in the room, is the conversation that I'd like to have with you about Phil Mickelson. And what Zach Johnson said when he was talking about that ball drop, you know, ball, even if I'd hit it, it would, again, it, he talked about double hitting a golf ball because it was moving, right? And if he had hit it when it moved, while it was falling, all right, I'll go.
Yeah, theoretically, that would be a penalty. But your point, Danielle, is we don't really know, and it is way too confusing. and things have to be simplified. And, you know, going back to the U.S. Open last week is just a perfect example. They need to change the rule because Phil didn't really understand it as much as he had a statement afterwards that said he was trying to take advantage of the rules. I'm really not of the opinion that was the case. I think he had a knee-jerk reaction and then kind of made up the story afterwards. But the point is that rule is so complicated, and there are a couple of rules that actually deal with it. I believe they need to simplify it and just say, hey, if you intentionally strike a moving ball, you are disqualified.
DQ'd.
If you intentionally do that, period, done, it's over.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that people do on weekends, you know, because they've gotten frustrated chasing a ball and they're embarrassed because they're making people wait. So they just go and hit that ball, you know, while it's moving, just to stop it because it's going too far. And the part of me that was, when I was watching, I'm thinking to myself, he's angry. I mean, it's obvious that he's angry. He's angry at the situation, and he's just reacting. Then when he said that he was doing it so he would get a two-shot penalty and only have to take that penalty and then be able to walk away, other people had an interesting take on it. He just did it because of the pace of play. It was taking too long, and he wanted to stop the whole mess and move on.
Well, but you can't do that within a round of golf. You have to complete the hole, and you have to have a score on the hole.
There you go.
I think he was angry, and I believe that he was upset with the setup of the course, and it was just a question of when he was going to let that frustration out. We saw him do that at the Ryder Cup a couple of years ago, not hitting a moving ball, but you knew he wanted to make a statement. After Glenn Eagles, when the U.S. team had lost and gotten beaten badly, and he didn't like the way Tom Watson coached it. And so he had in his mind that at some point he was going to say something about that. And sure enough, he did in the press conference right after that Ryder Cup. And it went a long way toward changing the way the U.S. looks at the Ryder Cup. Phil gets those things in his mind. The whole thing for me, though, is, Danielle, there is an overriding clause in the rule book that says the committee can consider disqualification for a serious breach of the rule. A serious breach of any rule should put a person in a position where they're disqualified. And to me, what Phil did was a serious breach of the rules because he intended to strike the moving ball in order to have it not roll all the way back down in front of the green.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he gave out the statement, I know this should have come sooner, but it's taken me a few days to calm down. My anger and frustration got the best of me last weekend. I'm embarrassed and disappointed by my actions. It was clearly not my finest moment, and I'm sorry. But, you know, on the one hand, I was reading some of the tweets that the professional golfers, they were aghast. They didn't understand why he wasn't disqualified. And then I read another story about a lot of the weekend golfers, you know, people who are observers who love Phil and everybody likes him because he's so out there, honest, you know, in your face. They're like, well, yeah, we understand why he did that. So it's just a weird thing going on with Phil and this situation with the double strike and moving a ball, hitting a ball while it's in motion. I was flabbergasted by the whole thing.
The thing I don't like about it, and I didn't like the entire U.S. Open week. I thought it was a bad week for the USGA. We had a big controversy in the way they set up the golf course on Saturday, and it was over the top, and they tried to take it too close to the edge, and it didn't work. But to me, the bigger problem of anything, Danielle, is that we are trying to grow the game. We are trying to get people who might have been watching the U.S. Open that don't play golf on a regular basis to say, hey, I'm going to take up golf. But there wasn't one thing about that U.S. Open that screamed, this is really fun. Oh, we should take up golf. It was exactly the opposite, and I think that is a really bad statement to be making when we're trying to grow this game.
Funny that you should say that, because at the top of the show I said it depressed me, because I can watch myself do that, and it's depressing when I do it. Why would I want to watch other people have such stinking, rotten rounds? But, you know, some people say, well, I liked seeing those guys suffer because, you know, I suffer. But why would we want to suffer and spend all that time? And I totally agree with you. Growing the game, having people watch the Travelers Championship, man, I mean, Spieth doesn't make the cut at the U.S. Open. Rory McIlroy doesn't make the cut at the U.S. Open. And after day one, they were at the top of the leaderboard, you know, shooting 63, 64. And I'm like, well, this is a different ball game, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, the whole week I felt at Shinnecock like I was walking around in a funeral march. And Travelers, frankly, is the perfect tournament to have right after the U.S. Open, because this is the antithesis of the U.S. Open. This is fun. I'm standing here outside our set looking at the family fun zone, and kids are rock climbing, and there's 50,000 people out here today, and it's kind of a misty, rainy, not a beautiful day, but there's noise coming from all over the course, and the players are into it, and they've got a good attitude, and it's primarily because they feel so welcome here. There wasn't anything that made them feel welcome last week at the U.S. Open. We got to have more of this and less of that, I really think.
Mike Davis, interesting, because he's always been a course setup guy for the championships, and then he became executive director. I was amazed that during the U.S. Open, he actually came out and said, no doubt, we would admit there were aspects of this setup that went too far. And some people said it was the hole locations. The setup wasn't that bad. It was where they were putting the holes. What was it, everything, Mark?
I don't know that it was everything. The hole locations were terrible on Saturday. The one at 15 was the worst by far, and 13. The big problem that I see here is the average golf fan doesn't really know the difference between the USGA and the PGA Tour, or the USGA and the Augusta National, let's say. They love the tournaments for what they are. They don't care who the host organizations are or the governing bodies that set them up, and I don't understand why the U.S. Open feels like they have to take the course right to the edge in order to determine our national champions.
Protect par at all costs.
Well, of course, but why? So what? Who cares? I really don't know. I think the USGA is going to have to rethink. Early in the week at Shinnecock, they said what happened in 2004 at Shinnecock, which was way worse than this year. They said it'll never happen again. We have much more information. We have more, you know, equipment, devices. It'll never happen again. And then it happened again. It says to me, maybe we should get the other organizations involved in running the U.S. Open, along with the USGA. Get more input from the PGA Tour field staff that does it week in and week out.
Well, that's exactly what James Hong, who is the PGA Tour Player Advisory Council, he said, to me, that's amateur hour, referring to Shinnecock. They don't know how to run a professional event because they don't run professional events. That's pretty strong.
To me, it is strong. And James Hong's a well-respected guy. I think the USGA should focus on the rules, on growing the game, on handicapping players, grassroots initiatives and things like that. And yes, it could be their championship that they oversee, but they ought to get way more input from the experts that set up golf courses every week for the best players in the world.
Awesome. Excellent. I started the show talking a little bit about the Top Golf, and where are we in that process?
Well, we're getting ready to start our listening tour, and I'm coming back. I've got Ladies Golf in Chicago this coming week, and then I'll be back for a couple weeks in July, and we're going to begin going around back out to the community and hearing what people have to say and what they want. And the plan is for everything to be coming together by the end of the year. So for the next few months, we're really going to be listening to what people are saying about the driving range situation at Alawai, the golf course in general at Alawai. What should it really be? And how is Top Golf going to fit into it? And I'm hoping that by the end of the year, we've got a pretty good thought process with all the input from the community, and that by early next year, we're starting to move.
Awesome. And you, of course, will let us know where those conversations will be so we can go.
Of course we will.
Okay, one more. I know you've been on the air for like hours and days, and just being at the U.S. Open was a real challenge for a lot of people. Some told me they stayed on the couch for days. Look at Brooks Koepka over at Travelers Championship. He's playing with his eyes closed, and he's still doing really, really well. Yeah, beware the exhausted golfer or the injured golfer. But let me just... Tiger Woods, okay? Just Tiger Woods. Somebody made a comment that made me think. He doesn't have a coach. He's doing this on his own. He's doing everything by feel, his hands. One person said at the U.S. Open, Woods was drawing shapes in the air with his hands. Like, everything is, he doesn't, and another person said, Butch Harmon should be there just to watch and give him some feedback. What are your thoughts?
Well, I definitely think Butch Harmon and Tiger Woods ought to get reunited, but I also definitely think that's not going to happen. They're both pretty stubborn guys, in case you haven't noticed. Tiger's swing was the best ever when Butch Harmon was working with him. And Butch is not the kind of teacher that has a formula. He doesn't teach like Hank Haney does or some of the other guys that have specific systems. What Butch does is take what the player is really good at and what their natural tendencies are, and then helps mold the swing that best fits that. And I think Tiger's swing has changed over the years, primarily because of his physical limitations. And so now it's time to get reunited with Butch. I think that would be a tremendous idea. Having said that, I don't think it's going to happen.
We can solve the world's problems in golf, right? Right, and we'll just keep on pushing for it. I mean, Tiger Woods is doing fabulous things with you in Chicago, the Chicago Parks Alliance, and all that stuff. And people are thrilled with what he's doing. Maybe he'll soften a little bit. Who knows? We can hope.
Who knows? But I think it would take as many people to arrange a Butch Harmon summit as it did for the one in Singapore with Trump and Kim Jong-un. It's kind of trying to get two guys together, you know, that really don't fit together very well.
Okay, now you've really laid it out. We understand. Comprende. Mark Rolfing, golf broadcast announcer and analyst, of course. So many titles. You are awesome. NBC and Golf Channel. Look forward to talking to you in the very near future.
Can't wait to get back out there, Danielle. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Aloha. We're going to come back and talk with one of our wonderful coaches here in Hawaii. He is a master PGA. He is Golf Channel Academy lead coach, owner of Maui School of Golf, Golf Channel Academy, of course. His name is Claude Brousseau. Maybe you've heard of him, Master PGA. He has his own school, and he's got a special announcement right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurastone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's creative! Plumbing! 841-2837. Your experts on call.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf is easier with coaching from PGA Master Teaching Professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game. Scratch golfer or just beginner, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Claude is at Maui School of Golf at the Kahili Course on Maui. You'll get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claude@bullofgolf.com. Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Let's see, 40 yards to the pin, wind in my face. Where's my wedge? I saw this flop shot on TV. Oh, not even close. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
The PGA Professional Championship, the major of the PGA's Ryan Vermeer from Happy Hollow won the PGA Professional Championship. He's going to the PGA Championship with 20 PGAs who played in the PGA Professional Championship. And we have our PGA Master right now, Claude Brousseau, Golf Channel Academy lead coach, owner of Maui School of Golf, in the clubhouse. Good morning, Claude.
Aloha, Danielle.
It's really good having you on the show. And I've always, you know, I keep going through your book. I look at the different things that I can discover that I need to work on in my game. Realize your golfing potential. Unlock the secrets of a proficient short game. Emphasis on pro. And Claude Brousseau, a masterful collection of thoughts and images will let you chip, pitch, hit sand shots and putt with increased confidence, leading to lower scores. That's from Martin Hall, host of School of Golf on Golf Channel. So, Claude, I understand that you have a special announcement for us this morning.
Exactly, Danielle. I'm so excited because now, not only they could have the image in the book, but I produced over 100 instructional videos that would help your listener to get better, and they will have the voiceover. They will be able to look at it, watch them as often as they want. They will be, in a library where you can just, if you want, watch bunker play or chipping or pitching. At this time, it's really focused on the short game. So it's a very exciting moment to be able to share my expertise on video.
Yes, instructional videos. Now, I was watching the one that I got to preview, one of Claude Brousseau's instructional videos, and it's short. It's, you know, it's not like long. Everybody wants things short, don't they, Claude? It's about a minute, and it's so simple. It's about the grip. And it's so brilliant, Claude, because you talk about how to hold the club, and you use an item in the house or in the office that everybody can easily get a hold of. Describe that for us.
Yes, just to go along with that, I'm using a ruler, because just going back to, I was listening with you in March just before, golf has to be fun. It has to be simple. People do that for hobbies. So I like to use tools, analogy that people have on a daily life. Like you be sitting at your office, and then you will take a ruler, just a plain ruler, and don't even think. Just grab it. And so far, in 20 years of teaching, I have not seen yet somebody grabbing it in the palm. You see, your brain is designed to play golf. Just get out of the way. So if you just grab the ruler naturally, it will go in the fingers, both hands. And then you just, after you get that feel, you just grab your club, and then you replicate that feel on the club. And you go back and forth between. And before you know, you will have a very, very functional grip.
So the way I grab the ruler, which is, as you said, functional, is the way I should be holding the club in my fingers. And I can't wait. I mean, I haven't had time since watching the video to get the ruler and do that. But today I want to hold the ruler, and I want to hold, and there's a club in the house, and I want to see, you know, the difference, because I'm sure that I'm holding it way too much in the palm of my hand, as you suggest. You know, that it shouldn't be. It should be in our fingers. And
exactly.
It's beautiful.
And, and the reason why people grab the ruler in the fingers is because it's flat and there is an edge. Automatically, it put it in the fingers because of the leading edge of the ruler.
Yeah, that's and cute, yes.
And on the golf grip, it's rounded, so naturally people want to hold it in the palm because it gives them a sensation of power. But with the edge of the ruler, it gives you finesse in your fingers and your hands, because this is the only point of contact in between the golfer and the club. And this way, you have better control on the club face, because we have to remember that everything we train for is to become a master of the club face. Why? Because the club face is what controls the ball. Here another analogy. I will give the viewer, the listener, a little taste of the next video or some of the video. Think about it this way. If you drive your car and you hold the steering wheel, okay, every time you move your wrist and your hands, the car may go left or right. But guess what? It's the same simplicity that you can use for the club face. So ruler, steering wheel, I got plenty of them on those instructional video that it makes sense for people. I have quite often some people come in and they will say, oh, it's so complicated, I don't understand. We have as coach to simplify the instruction so people have more fun, improve faster, because they can make a connection on something that they're doing almost on a daily basis and just transfer it to the golf course.
Excellent. We are KPUA Hilo, K-O-R-L-Y-N-I, Honolulu, K-O-N-I, Lanai City, K-T-O-H, Kalaheo. Those are the four radio stations we're on right now simultaneously. We're talking with Claude Brousseau, PGA master, and he's here in Hawaii. He's at the Kahili course. I bet the Kahili course is, they put out on social media this beautiful picture that you've captured, your crew captured, of the Kahili course and the clouds and the way the sun is shining. And you're, I think, working in the bunker? Yes.
That picture, I was working in the bunker. And Danielle, it's the first time in 9 years that I spent the whole summer on Maui. And I'm telling you, Kaili, right now, with all the trees in bloom, the flowers, it's just spectacular. And the maintenance crew is doing a great job to get our greens back in good shape. I mean, you see the valley, you see Haleakala, you see the ocean from both sides on some of the holes.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
This is just gorgeous.
Yeah, there's a 910 and a 1054 if you'd like to play around at the Kahili course. The 1054 may be more, depending on where you're at in your morning. But there's also a 910 if you're really close by. You can just swing over to the Kahili course. It's absolutely gorgeous. Okay, speaking of the Kahili course, that is where Claude Brousseau is. You have a summer junior golf camp on July 10th?
Yes. So it's a three-day. It's 10, 11, and 12. It's at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's an hour and a half. And it's for junior. And for them, again, I love kids. I mean, my last one in June was so interesting. At 5 years old, she was so cute. And they are so excited. And you see, they don't make it complicated. It's about have fun. And then talking of that, I like to use the five F's with the kids. And the first F, of course, is fun. The second one is fingers. How you put your fingers on the club. The next one is feet, how you organize your body. Then the face of the club needs to look at the flag and finish. And so they just love it. And then I will ask them, what are the five F's? And they just raise their hands and they race to give the answer. It's so much fun.
Fun, and, fingers, feet, face, and finish. I just raised my hand to do it.
Yes. And then when I go for the fingers with kids, I call that making a hot dog. So if you take the thumb of the leading hand, or most of right-handed golfer will be the left thumb, and then I told them this. So the thumb is a sausage. You need to make a hot dog. And then with the palm of the trailing hand, you just put like a bun with your other thumb in the palm. And I said, just put the sausage in the bun. And then guess what? They have automatically a super good grip. And it's just so much fun with them.
You know, maybe we should all be like five. And I'll come, you know, like... Pretend we're 5 year olds and go over to Kahili course and Maui School of Golf and take a lesson with Claude Brousseau. The summer junior golf camp is July 10th, 11th, and 12th. An hour and a half a day. It's only $165 per golfer. And they learn the five F's of golf: fun, fingers, feet, face, and finish. Very successful in May. And another one, July 10, 11, and 12. How do they get in touch with you, Claude?
Others can call me. My phone number is 808-870-1422, or they can email me at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com.
All right. You're also on Oahu. For those of you listening on Oahu,
yeah.
You'll be here on Saturday, June 30th, right at the end of the month.
That's correct. So, again, I get some time available in the afternoon from 1 to 5 p.m., again, they just have to contact me, and we'll make sure that they have fun learning. And just remember, you're doing that for a hobby. Of course, you can be frustrated when you miss a shot. Nobody likes to miss a shot. But they have to understand that missing shot in golf is like falling off the surfboard. I often use that analogy. I say, do you surf? Oh, yes, I do. I say, do you fall off the boards once in a while? Of course, Claude. And then I look at them and I say, how come? And you get frustrated because you fall off the board. They say, no, I get back on and I go for the next wave. Okay, but playing golf, missing a shot, it's part of playing golf. You just need to learn from it. And I do that with the kids also. I say, stop calling this a bad shot. From now on, it is not a bad shot. It's a learning shot. What can you learn from that shot? Okay. ball went too far right. What would you do to make it go straighter or left? We learn by differentiation. I mean, if you always just tasted a lemon tart, you have no clue what a chocolate tart tastes like. People say, well, no, it's not golf. Yes, it is golf. With kids, I use often that. I like to give them letters because they learn the alphabet. I say, golf. Do you know what golf stands for? G, game. O, of. L, life. F, first. Game of life first. So just don't get upset. Look what you can learn from it. It's all about having fun, getting better, learning and adjusting constantly like you do in life. Nothing goes exactly like planned in your life, isn't it?
Exactly. This is Claude Brousseau, Golf Channel Academy lead coach here in Hawaii. He's owner of Maui School of Golf. It's at the Kahili course. He's got the Summer Junior Golf Camp July 10, 11, and 12th. It's an hour and a half a day. It's only $165 per golfer, and that's for kids. And he'll be on Oahu. Of course, he also does adult lessons. You can easily get in touch with him, 808-870-1422. If you'd like to get together with Claude between 1 and 5, he has openings on June 30th, and that's 808-870-1522. You can also just email him at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com. He is a Vision 54 coach, because you're not certified in Vision 54, but he's learned from the best, and Aim Point certified. So if you have your game at a certain level and you want to take it a little bit further, Claude Brousseau is your guy. Okay, thank you so much for being on the show, Claude.
Thank you very much, Danielle. It's always a pleasure talking with you and with your listener. Aloha.
We're gonna come back. TV producer on Golf Channel for 15 years, turns author. And boy, does he have a page turner. We'll be back with Keith Hirschland right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
As we jet from place to place, we buckle in knowing they maintain their planes daily. They don't put off repairs till the next month. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your water line, sewer line, or fire line broke at the worst possible moment. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or commercial center, high-rise, townhouse, or hen house. You need your job done now. Done right. That's Creative Plumbing.
Your experts on call.
Have you ever seen a building or a magazine photo or traveled to a place that captured your imagination? Futura Stone's Master Craftsman can transform your vision into a reality. Does your project call out for a permeable pavement, parking area, pool deck, plaza, or grand entry? Bring us your plans. Futura Stone's unique outdoor products and services can turn your resort, building, or home's exterior into an oasis that will last a lifetime. Call Futura Stone, 841-7440 across Hawaii. Futura Stone, only the best.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf is easier with coaching from PGA Master Teaching Professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game. Scratch golfer or just beginner, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Claude is at Maui School of Golf at the Kahili course on Maui. You'll get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com. That's Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
All righty. Welcome back into the clubhouse. So good to have you on the air with us. Keith Hirschland is author. He's the original Golf Channel broadcast team member, on location broadcast crew producer. He was there. He was doing it. He was in the control room looking at this shot, take this shot, getting everything sorted out and Now he is an author. Grew up in a TV newsroom and has kind of chronicled in his first book, Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In. Next comes, I think, must be his true calling, kind of crime novels. His Big Flies was published in 2016, 3 editions. His latest book is The Flower Girl Murder, already in its 2nd edition, a frequent traveler to Hawaii. But, boy, that Flower Girl Murder, Keith, welcome.
Hi, Danielle. How are you?
I'm good. And, you know, like this one, I could just read and read and read and read. That one's dangerous.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad you liked it. You know, I tried. It's so hard to figure out, you know, I don't think you can write for hoping that people will like the book. I think you write and you hope you like the book. And then in turn, if that translates into readers enjoying it, then that's all a writer can ask for. So I'm happy that I'm beyond happy. I'm thrilled that you found it readable.
Oh yeah. Oh, the way you introduce the characters. I mean, and it's not long. It's just, you know, in a couple pages, you like, okay, here, this is a person. Boy, that one character who gets herself a gun, man, she's really something.
Yeah,
she's really something. And there was one point in the book, and this is a little on the side. So I'm reading, and it says, the main character, and he says, he's getting a call about, you know, they're asking him to get back into television, you know, and they want him to go to this, take over the newsroom where he'd been, you know, where his father had been. I'm thinking, oh, Keith is getting back into TV. It's a part of his life in the book. No, I guess not. Why, right? Why would you do that if you can have fun writing?
Well, yeah, one of my mentors early on said, write what you know. So there's a lot of past history. There's a lot of my experiences, obviously, in the memoir. That's all, you know, all my experiences. But even in the fiction, there are things that I tried to extrapolate on that actually happened to me. And you'll notice the golf pro in Flower Girl Murder may or may not sound familiar to a lot of people, but that was based on Jerry Foltz, my good friend, who played the mini tours for years and years, and then became one of my best broadcasters, and is still one of the best, if not the best, on-course announcer in the business. So, of course, I asked him first if I could use his likeness in the book, and he was more than happy to allow me to do that.
That is so cool. Yeah. Jerry is such a down-to-earth guy, and he is, as you said, he is so good on course. And you usually, if you watch the LPGA, Jerry Foltz is always on the LPGA, and then he goes into the major. They have to pull everybody together. This is where we're transitioning, Keith, just a little bit. This is where they have to pull everybody from the crew into something like a major championship to get that done. And I just want to ask you, you know, now there was something missing in the USGA coverage from the US Open. And okay. I just couldn't put my finger on it, except there was something, cameras. How many cameras does the PGA Tour use for, let's say, the Travelers or Pebble Beach, any of the events that they play?
Well, now you're stretching the limits of my capabilities, because it's, you know, obviously my last event was in 2013. And at that time on the PGA Tour, the major golf channel, we used considerably fewer tools than the major networks because, you know, we were on a pretty tight budget. Back then, the networks were using somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 or 50 cameras. Now, with all the robotic cameras and the tracer cameras, and the things that don't actually have to have a person behind them, that number has gone up. And I know that at the U.S. Open, there were more than 100, maybe 140 cameras.
Wow.
At Shinnecock. Yeah. So it's quite an undertaking. And I was there and saw some friends in the TV compound, because also at a major, the TV compound is full of, you know, there's featured holes, there's featured groups, there's a world broadcast trucks, there's,
you know, online now distribution. So they have to have their own truck, and they have their own producer, they have their own director, they have their own talent. It's an amazing little city that television puts together to televise any golf tournament, but certainly a major. It's beyond a lot of people's imagination.
Wow. Wow. I didn't realize that the number was that high. Did you want to be in there? Was there a part of...
I think there's always going to be a part of me that wants to be in there. And, you know, people have asked me this question before, and if I miss it, and I tell them, in all honesty, I miss the people. I miss the camaraderie. I miss the teamwork. I miss the sharing of ideas, because you're around a huge group of amazing, talented, creative people. And just to sit around in a production meeting and listen to people talk and we should do this and have we thought about doing this and what if we did this, that's the kind of thing that, you know, just gets your creative juices going. And listening to everybody's ideas was always one of the things that I tried to do. And a lot of people, I'm sure, would say that I didn't listen very well, but,
cause you didn't take their idea, of course.
Right. But I always tried to listen, and we, you know, it's a team effort. It's a true team effort. And I heard Shane on earlier, and who's part of an amazing broadcast team. And of course, Rolf, who I've known for years and years and years, is, you know, one of the best in the business. And that broadcast team is so good. I think they would all agree with me that, you know, that it's a total team effort and it's a ton of fun.
You know, and I think part of it was we see the Fox team fewer times, and we get so used to the NBC team and the CBS team and the NBC team and the, you know, so we're sort of so accustomed to those people talking to us about this and that. And it's, we don't get a chance to get to know the people who are actually, I mean, I know Shane. I've known Shane, since right after he was a caddy in Scotland at St. Andrews, you know, when he was just starting his career in the broadcast business.
Right.
Going from one place to another. And now he's with Fox Sports. That's amazing. It's awesome, and they're doing a great job. It's just, I wish there was us, we'd able to get to know them, because you do develop an attachment when you watch Morning Drive or you watch Golf Central. You know, you're watching things golf, and you get you form attachments to people, and we don't have those same attachments. And I think that's the part that I had to sit down and get used to. Who was what is there? How do they talk? What is their way of delivering this information? It's everybody has their own way of communicating, and getting accustomed to that communication was the interesting part. And of course, by Saturday and Sunday, I was blown away by what I was seeing on television. Saturday was one incredible, like, what? What am I? What is this? And Sunday was all back to normal, and we were having a great contest, right? So, but let me ask you, what was your takeaway when, I mean, Phil, well, let's just focus on Phil for a second here. What did you think when that happened?
It was funny because I was out there and enjoyed it the entire time. I thought it was an amazing experience, and I had played Shinnecock a number of years ago, and say to this day that it's the hardest golf course I've ever played in my life. And I thought that it was an amazing test. I have such mixed emotions because, you know, I kind of understand what he did. I don't like it. I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. I don't think the USGA, I disagree with Mark. Who I heard earlier say that he thought Phil should have been disqualified. I thought he certainly could have been disqualified, but what he did, and if you look at the tape, and I'm sure people have over and over again, he actually, and the USGA's reasoning for not disqualifying him was that he actually made a stroke when he hit the moving ball. The ball almost went back in the hole. It actually hit the hole. So to say that, and there is a rule for that, that if you make a stroke, it's a two-shot penalty. If he had just simply stopped the ball or deflected it or hit it like John Daly did at Pinehurst, just took a whack at it, not attempting to make a stroke at it, then I think they would have disqualified him. I don't believe that the USGA gave Phil any special dispensation. I think that they looked at that rule. They saw that they could penalize him two strokes. They saw the tape. They saw him actually make a stroke at the ball and said, we're going to give him two shots and not disqualify him. But I think that if he had done something other than that, I honestly believe they would have disqualified him. So,
yeah.
You know, what I didn't like, and almost, I have to say what I liked even less, was when he went to the hole on Sunday and acted the way he acted with the, you know, with the fake, you know, the jumping and, you know, raising of the arms.
Yes.
And I think, I'm guessing that maybe that might be what he regrets more than anything. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
You haven't had a private conversation with him.
No, I haven't. I've had a number of conversations with him, you know, in my career, but never a private one, and I would never claim to say that I know him. But
yeah.
I think he probably, looking back on that, that might be something that he also regrets, is the way he acted on Sunday.
Yeah, it's just interesting, everybody's take. A lot of the professional golfers just were blown away, you know, the guys on tour. Just couldn't believe that he demonstrated that behavior. It was like, what did you do? You know,
And I also found it interesting in the interview. And if you listen to the interview that Curtis Strange did, which by the way was tremendous, I think Curtis is really, really gotten very, very good at his job. I thought the interview he did with Phil on Saturday was great, and I thought his call all week was really good, and then his Champions interview with Brooks, not inserting himself into the conversation at all, was just a touch of class. But Phil said to Curtis, he said he'd thought about doing it before at Augusta. Now, you know, he never did do it at Augusta, and I'm guessing he never would do it at Augusta, but he felt that, you know, he could do it at the U.S. Open. But I thought that was interesting. He thought, because he said, I thought about doing it a couple of times at Augusta on the 15th hole. I wonder what the reaction would have been had he done that.
What would have the green jackets done?
Right.
Well, okay. That's interesting, because I heard him say in a soundbite, and I didn't know if it went any further. He just said to somebody, I've wanted to do that in the past, and so I just did it. You know? And so I thought, well, was it he? I thought he was referring to that day.
I think a lot of people did, but if you listen again, he says at Augusta.
Wow.
So,
wow. Okay. Now it's, you know, so it's been inside him all this time.
Yeah, right.
And it finally jumped out.
Yeah. And clearly he was frustrated, and a lot of guys were, and I can understand that. I mean, that was an incredibly difficult golf course under extremely difficult conditions. So I get it.
With Mike Davis having always set up golf courses for the USGA and then becoming the executive director and maintaining his role as golf course setup guy, sometimes I think, well, at least this time I thought, and it was just, you know, it seems like he is always trying to show us and everyone around that he is a master genius and that he's going to make it just a little bit darker.
He should be a character in my next book, right?
There's an idea. Yeah,
that's a good idea. I'm gonna hang on. Let me make a note of that. I love that.
Because it's like, okay, you know, what else can I do to show just how? Because you always need challenges, you know, and at some point you just got to dial it back and make the golf course, as you said, the toughest. I mean, a lot of people say Shinnecock is the toughest course in the United States. Period. Yeah. You don't need to do any trick it out to make it hard for these guys to play. And watching the ball not quite, you know, stay and then go down into that horrible place there where it went. I guess that was 15. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, please. I'm so tired of watching this. I want to go somewhere else. But
I think Pebble Beach is going to be tremendous. I just, you know, I mean, that's one of the great golf courses in the world too. And I, you know, I mean, I'm an optimist. I think it's going to be tremendous. And, you know, I also, you know, and Mark also said that, you know, they should get other tour people involved and that, you know, and I'm going to play devil's advocate on that too, because they don't always get it right. I mean, we remember you know, the Players' Championship a few years ago when they almost lost those greens. And we remember the British Open a couple of years ago when the wind blew so hard and they didn't stop play right away.
Yes, 40 miles
an
hour.
And we remember the PGA Championship when Rory McIlroy's hitting into the group in front of him on the 18th hole so they can finish before dark.
Yes, that was crazy.
I mean, so they all get it. They all get it wrong. nobody's perfect, but, you know, I think the expectation is for perfection. And, those organizing bodies have to live with that.
You know, and it's true because we hold the USJ at a higher standard. At least I do. Because of what they represent and what they do in the game, I expect them, you know, you want to make it a difficult test to show the best player. And I think Mike Davis put it really well. You know, a bad shot shouldn't be penalized that much.
A good shot definitely shouldn't be penalized.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. So I really respected that he came out and talked about it before it was over. On Sunday, he said we got that wrong. And after, of course, earlier in the week saying they'd never do 2004 again, it was pretty shocking for everybody. But obviously, you and I could talk about this for a while. And my show ends in a couple of minutes. And I want to talk about your books again, because this is Keith Hirschland, author. He was the Golf Channel original broadcast crew for 15 years and 3 months, I think it was. Grew up in a TV newsroom. So he chronicled his life in Cover Me, Boys, I'm Going In. And I felt like that was like your way of just getting your whole story out, like fleshing yourself onto the page and then being a clean slate. And then he comes up with his true calling, I call it, big flies, and flies, we're not talking about the insect, big flies, but they act like, published in 2016, three editions, great job there. And his latest book is The Flower Girl Murder. And you've got to get it. And my producer and my on-air producer is going, your show ends at 9 o'clock, right? I think it's 8:30.
You know, I never liked the guy sitting behind me telling me that the clock was ticking down.
Hey, what's wrong with you? You know, you've got 2 minutes, 3 minutes to the close of the show. Yeah. So when are you coming back to Maui?
Soon.
Really?
Been too long. We're planning a trip. You know, we look at our calendars and my wife's very busy, and you know, we look at the calendars and it was, we were there last year, and I'm sorry I didn't say hello. We went up to Makawao and visited my parents' gravesites and spent some time over on the Wailea side, which we hadn't ever really done. We usually stayed at Kapalua. So we really enjoyed that. So we're already working on the next trip over.
Oh, good. Cause Wailea is so beautiful. The beach is gorgeous. And by the way, there's a tee time at the Wailea Blue Course. If you'd like to get out and play around, there's a 10, 12 and 11 o'clock. Kahili has a 10:54. That's where Claude Brousseau is. The Royal Hawaiian Country Club is a 10:40, and Poipu Bay, where the Southside Men's Club going out today. May you all hit the sweet spot every time there's an 11:30. Makalei has a 9:26 and a 10:36, and Volcano has a 10:54. They are playing even as the lava flows. Yes, as long as the wind is blowing in the right direction, golfers are playing at Volcano. Keith Hirschland, so wonderful talking with you. Thank you for being on the show.
It's always my pleasure, Danielle, and thank you so much for having me back on. You do a great job and a great service to the golf fans all over the world, and especially in Hawaii, and I hope everybody appreciates what you do.
Domo arigato. Thank you very much. Aloha. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
We're going to thank the people who make this show possible. Raynor Doors, the overhead door, and their door protects the Lamborghini showroom. So you want it to protect your home. And, you know, as he said, you heard it in the spot. Have you taken a look at your overhead door lately? There's some really, really pretty ones that you should really check out, because it's the one thing that is amazing that will increase the value of your home. Futura Stone's master craftsman, turning your building, your warehouse, your showroom, or your home project into artwork. You've got a dream, call Futura Stone. And Creative Plumbing, Only the best. Call Creative Plumbing. Thank you for your money. May you hit the sweet spot every time. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurestone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurestone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
We know you aren't looking for a new garage door right now. Even though you haven't changed it in many years, even though the new styles you've seen look clean and strong, even though your current garage door is creaking and groaning, even though your garage door is the first impression that visitors have of your home, you just aren't ready. Or are you? Rainer Hawaii will make it simple to beautify your home. Call Rainer now at 676-3667. That's Rainer at 676-3667.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens, your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home, you need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing!
841-2837.
You're experts on call.
Let's see. 40 yards to the pin, wind in my face. Where's my wedge? I saw this flop shot on TV. Oh, not even close. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
And thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2018.